We are living in an age of overwhelm. In this country and around the world, people are depleted, distracted, and on the brink of despair. This is not just how I feel, it's confirmed by experts. One of them is Laura Vandernoot Lipsky, founder of the Trauma Stewardship Institute. For over 30 years, she's been working with people who have been through trauma and those who feel the effects of trauma by helping survivors of it. She's also an activist for environmental justice and racial justice and the mother of two children. The results of our many traumas, personal and social traumas, Lipsky says, are widespread anxiety, animosity, and fear. Overwhelm denies us a sense of freedom and choice. It saps our well-being, steals our joy. I'm thinking of the lament of the Holly Near song that we just sang. There is hurting in my family, and there is sorrow in my town. There is panic all across the nation, and there is wailing the whole world round. While political division and strife have always been part of this country's life, now there's even more cause to fear a rejection of constitutional principles by the U.S. government. Many of us mourn the loss of any sense of human decency, mercy, or fair play. The epidemic of gun violence and the many revelations of sexual assault are heartbreaking. So are climate change, natural disasters, and the mass extinction of species. Plenty of reasons to feel depleted, to feel despair. Knowing about these traumas and tragedies can be overwhelming, just knowing about them. Feeling them up close must be even more devastating. One source of overwhelm to a great many people in the United States is poverty. Poverty has grown to envelop nearly 40% of the population, while economic dislocations have made the rest of us, many of the rest of us, feel constantly vulnerable. What is more distracting than having to make decisions between paying the utility bill or the rent? Between buying food or going to see the doctor. When your child is sick, do you stay home and lose wages? Leave them at home or send them to school and hope for the best? Even if you're not poor, parenting in these times seems ever more demanding, challenging, and complicated, even downright scary. Distractions can creep up on us. Things that we thought would make life easier are also distractions which drain our serenity. So many of us, for example, are never without our smartphones. On average, people tap or swipe a smartphone 2,600 times a day. We jump to its beeps and vibrations, responding to notifications of text messages, pictures, Facebook postings, comments of others, and others liking what we have posted. When you want to respond to another person's posting on Facebook, you click like and a little thumbs up icon appears by their post with your name. You could also click a red heart, a sad face, a smiley face, and other signs of your support. When he worked for the Facebook Corporation, Justin Rosenstein was the engineer who created the like button. He regrets it now. He worries about its addictive nature, about the serotonin rush the like provides. He says the likes are bright dings of pseudo-pleasure that can be as hollow as they are seductive. Laura Vandernoot Lipsky writes, despite more technologies aimed at connecting people and ideas and information, we now experience greater social and personal disconnection than before. Of course, I can think of examples where crucial information would not have been exchanged without social media like Facebook. Many fruitful connections have been made through online social media. So it's a paradox that something that can help us connect has coincided with a higher degree of disconnection. Lipsky says teens and young adults in particular have told her that one of the most harmful aspects of social media is the unceasing habit of comparing themselves with others, comparing themselves with those they know and with people they may never even meet. And the constant tug of what's out there is keeping us from appreciating who we are and what we have and what we have control over. It's so easy to be distracted and so easy to be reactive. Sitting alone with a smartphone or a computer, we can say things on email or social media that many of us would be embarrassed to say in public. Oversharing personal information, making dismissive insults, even attacking people verbally. A cartoon from the New Yorker magazine shows two men in tunics on horseback with round shields by their waist. Facing them yards away are hundreds of soldiers lined up in ranks with spears and shields at the ready. A catapult in the back is loaded with a boulder and ready to spring toward this pair. One horseman says to the other, "Maybe you shouldn't send out emails when you're tired." I agree. I even try to avoid reading emails when I'm tired. Also, at night, I don't want to be exposed to something online that would stop me from winding down for bed, that would get me wound up instead. But habits creep up on me. I guess that's how bad habits work. You don't just decide you'll give up control to some wasteful or harmful activity. They creep up and slip into your life. The other night, I read Lipsky's advice to avoid looking at the screen of a computer or a phone before going to bed, and especially not in bed. Likewise, don't look at the phone first thing in the morning. I shook my head in wonder that people could be so much under the spell of their phone. Just after 6 in the morning, as my phone's alarm rang and buzzed, I reached for the phone to turn it off. I looked at it, and I scrolled down. I've got email. I opened the inbox to see what had come in for the night. And then I laughed. Wow, I'm doing it myself. I'm barely awake, and I'm distracted already. Lipsky invites us to notice times and places when we are not connected and to catch ourselves with compassion. However, when we are overwhelmed, she says, we are not reliable. We cannot reliably gauge if we're doing harm to ourselves or causing harm to others. This could include the way we're driving if we're distracted, or the way we speak to others if we're depleted. It's helpful if we have people in our lives who can point such things out to us. This can be done with a simple statement and a question, like, I'm noticing that you're more distracted than usual. You're doing things you wouldn't normally do. How are you feeling? Of course, if others are going to be brave enough to ask us this question, it could be helpful for them to know that we would consider their question and take some time to respond to it with grace and not hostility. Easier said than done. Responding with grace calls for intention and for practice. Given how sneaky our habits can be, it matters that we not get isolated. Being overwhelmed narrows our sense of options, so connections are really crucial, whether it's through family, friends, community, or congregation. Connections are crucial. When we are beset by confusion or worry or fear, Lipsky says, it can be a great gift for someone to point out what we can't see. The way you feel, that's what overwhelm feels like. Just saying that, just acknowledging what's obvious, can help. By our listening, by our presence with others, by showing empathy, we can encourage one another. Encouragement can be a simple and obvious observation, like, I know you're going through a lot, and the feelings you have are normal feelings for a situation that is not normal. Some of the best advice that I've received, but which I don't follow nearly enough, is do one thing at a time. The choices and challenges of life today make it so hard to do this. Technology invites us to think we can do more than one thing at a time with no sacrifice of attention or presence or safety or effectiveness. Maybe I shouldn't blame technology. Too often I go out the door of the house holding things in both arms, thinking about something that happened the day before or what's coming up later. Out the door, it's only two steps down, but they're concrete steps, and every now and then I trip. If I trip and fall, the place where I fall is concrete as well. Every time I stumble or drop things and nearly fall, I realize how costly my distraction can be. In the age of overwhelm, Lipsky says, we have to reclaim the liberty of being intentional, of living with intention. This is how we go out the door, navigate a scary world, or negotiate the demands of living together under one roof, by intention. When life is crowding in or going too fast, step back. Lipsky confesses that she and her spouse, as parents, don't always model the techniques that her expertise would indicate as helpful, yet they learn from their children. One time, she says, one of their little girls took a step back. Lipsky writes, it was in the middle of a full family heated moment with a lot of momentum. We heard her young voice say, I just need a minute. We all stopped. She didn't go anywhere. She didn't do anything visibly. But that pause made their discussion more civil. The little girl took a step back. She did it for herself, but she brought everyone else along. Lipsky says, now they are teenagers, and the girls are able to balance their strong feelings with what is appropriate behavior in a stressful situation. For example, they can take a second and reach for a half-eaten snack from their backpack, or roll down the car window, or walk over to pet their dog. Just a break, a pause. Lipsky's book, The Age of Overwhelm, has this subtitle, Strategies for the Long Haul. That's an important thing to remember when feeling daunted about the state of the world. Remember the long haul, the long term, and live that way. Live in the present, but keep a long-term perspective. When feeling confronted with so much, when feeling overwhelmed, where do we start? Lipsky says, do something. Do one thing. Less is more, she says. We don't have to do everything at once, and it's not sustainable. But do one thing. Do it for a while, and then add something else. Lipsky recommends a number of practices to help us from being smothered under the weight of overwhelm. Learn ways to walk side by side with overwhelm, where we can see it, but we don't let it control us. Her main advice is to act with intention. Be present for what you're feeling. Consider what your choices are and make a choice consciously. For example, it will take intention to reduce a habitual distraction. Choose one thing to change or one thing to stop. It could be cutting back on how much news you're exposed to. It could be cutting back on staying up too late. Or choose one thing to add to your life. It could be more exercise. It could be choosing to spend some time outside every day. She says, we don't have to scale mountains to benefit from being outside. Just going outside for a few minutes, looking at a tree and observing the light filtering through the leaves, that can regulate your nervous system and allow you to be more present. Don't wait till you're feeling overwhelmed to do this, but if you do feel that way, it can be a good break. Every suggestion Lipsky makes, every practice we might consider, falls under the overall advice of being intentional. Intention is the practice that underlies all the others. She says, intention is like the banks of a river directing our flow, the banks of a river through which grace can flow. She advises rather basic and traditional spiritual practices, familiar ones, pausing, paying attention, naming what we're grateful for, and being generous. We can resist the age of overwhelm simply by listing reasons for gratitude in our life and in our world. Life's not perfect, not easy, but we can look for the gifts that do exist in it. If we waited to feel gratitude until we had everything we wanted or thought we needed, it would be a long wait. Meanwhile, we would be denying ourselves the gifts of gratitude. And the gifts of gratitude include a sense of well-being and hope and possibility. A sense of overwhelm distracts us from the aspects of life over which we actually have control and have some choice. The practice of being generous is a concrete way to assert our freedom and our ability to make a difference, to assert our connections to others and affirm our dignity. Generosity is a way to resist overwhelm. Gratitude and generosity are practices that we can choose by our intentions. Intentions come first. The writer Mohsen Hamid has indicated his intentions. He said he has chosen to resist the constant inflow of negative feelings, not by withdrawing or ignoring his problems or the problems of the world, but by working actively to make things better. His intention, he says, is to try to imagine a better future and to do things that in my small way make it more likely that that future will come to exist. Lipsky says that our body and our mind and our spirit can keep up with just so much. In a world of overload, it's normal to feel overwhelmed. But we can stop, step back, be intentional, and do one thing at a time. We can use technology as a tool rather than letting it use us the way a bad habit uses us. When considering what to do or what to say in a given situation, we can ask whether doing so will enhance connections or erode them. This is what intention means. Taking the long view, naming our gratitude, showing generosity, any and all of these are popular if we are possible if we set an intention. Taking time to be intentional is a gift to ourselves, and it's a gift to others, and it's a gift to the world. Intention can help us navigate the age of overwhelm. It is like the banks of a river, the banks of a river through which grace can flow. in the coming week, I invite you to join me in choosing one thing to stop doing temporarily, one thing that you will give a break from or take a break from, and just see how that feels. Or maybe in the coming week, choose one thing to add. Perhaps a daily reading, poetry or sacred scripture, or a spiritual writer, or daily writing, or getting outside every day, or sitting in silence for 10 minutes, or 5 minutes, or 2 minutes. Do something, but do only one thing. Bring your intention to choosing it and doing it. Experiment and observe. Sometime later, you may decide to add something else or remove something else. Trying to do everything or trying to quit doing everything is the path to frustration. Choosing to do one thing at a time could be the path to freedom. Each of us has a gift to offer the world and the people around us. We start by showing up. The world needs us. The world needs you. Let us be present for this world. Let us be present for the gift of life and grateful for it and generous with it. Let us be present for life. So may it be. Blessed be. Amen.